there, and welcome to Swiss Info's program for November the 2nd. I'm Veronica DeVore.
Already college started Monday, and Tuesday's just as bad. College started Monday, but Tuesday's just as bad.
It was a stormy Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and more for millions of people this week as wild weather, whipping wind, water, and early snows dominated the headlines in Switzerland and around the world. While many Swiss looked up in surprise as the season's first heavy snowflakes began to fall, millions along the U.S. East Coast were busy hoarding batteries, bread, and bottled water ahead of a massive late-season Frankenstorm, a hurricane named Sandy and a polar air mass that combined to form a gigantic destructive weather system spanning from Virginia to Canada. Swiss Info's U.S. correspondent Rita Empch found herself in the midst of the aftermath following Sandy's assault on New York City. The storm flooded homes, caused fires, and closed schools, businesses, airports, and even the stock exchange for days.
I have to say, I was very lucky. We were really lucky here in the area where I live. I mean, it was bad for a while, and the wind was really heavy. And it's just an unpleasant kind of feeling because you don't know how things will go. You don't know, are your windows going to hold? It's just you have to go through, you have to ride through it and hope nothing really bad happens. There was really a lot of heavy, heavy flooding. Subway tunnels are flooded, and it's going to take days and days and days before the subway can be running again.
Meanwhile, as Switzerland went off daylight savings time and winter darkness set in, the season's first substantial snow also covered much of the country, setting records for October snow in some places, including Bern. Just a week after many Swiss were enjoying unseasonably warm October weather in short sleeves, motorists found themselves stranded on the roads with summer tires still on their cars. Meteorologists had predicted that snow was possible, but generally didn't foresee the significant amount that fell in many cities. Some of Switzerland's oldest weather predictors, the weather prophets from the Murtotal and Canton Schwyz, didn't spot it either. Not because their predictions aren't accurate, but because they happen to be on vacation, says weather prophet Alois Holdener.
Our predictions always run between the 1st of November and the 20th of April, and then from the 1st of May to the 20th of October. The other 10 days in each season we take as vacation. The snowstorm just happened to come during that time.
Now that he's back at work, Holdener predicts a snowy and cold but relatively short winter ahead for Switzerland.
The coming winter, as I roughly see it, will start out quite nice. And then there will be the first real snow around December the 20th. Then, in February, it will be quite cold. And there will be a lot of snow, especially in the high altitudes. There will be the most snow in the highlands in early March. Around Easter, at the end of March, we'll see the first signs of spring. It will actually be an early spring.
Holdener and his five weather-predicting colleagues each give a general forecast for every month of the year, using signs they observe in the natural world, the thickness of anthills or the way plants grow, for example. However, the specific details of their science remain secret to outsiders. It's no secret that Switzerland is also susceptible to major weather events, but most people don't think of tsunamis as one of them. However, a group of researchers from the University of Geneva warn that the Swiss may be underestimating the risk of tsunamis in Swiss lakes, based on numerous historical accounts. According to new research published in the Nature Geoscience Journal, a massive rockfall, probably from the Le Gramont Mountain close to where the Rhone River flows into Lake Geneva at its eastern end, caused part of the river delta to collapse and slide into the lake in the year 583. Historical accounts describe how huge waves then inundated everything on the lake shores, devastated villages, destroyed a bridge and mills in Geneva, and passed over the city walls. It is not known how many people were killed. Guy Simpson, the study's co-author, described the basis for his research to Swiss Info journalist Simon Bradley.
There are at least two historical accounts of the tsunami. It is pretty much clear that there was a tsunami and it caused a considerable amount of damage along the edge of the lake. It entered into the old city by coming over the city walls. and it damaged livestock. So we're pretty confident, and most people are pretty confident that it did take place, but having said that, the historic accounts, there's not a lot of historic accounts, you know, there's two that we based our work on.
Simpson and his Geneva University team conducted a seismic survey of Lake Geneva along with radiocarbon dating of underwater rock sediment to corroborate their findings. They found a huge deposit originating from the delta region covering the deepest part of the lake. It is over 10 kilometers long, 5 kilometers wide, and 5 meters thick, and has an estimated volume of 250 million cubic meters. In addition to the wave that hit Geneva in the year 583, Swiss tsunamis were also recorded in the years 1584, 1601, 1687, and 1806 in the lakes of Geneva, Lucerne, and Lauert in central Switzerland. Some were caused by rock slides and others by earthquakes. Today, whether it's caused by tsunamis or by much more common torrential rains, governments, analysts, and especially insurance industry players like Swiss Re, a global reinsurer headquartered in Zurich, are concerned about the risks that flooding poses to Swiss homes and businesses. According to a recent report from Swiss Re, floods cause far and away the most damage of all the natural perils that regularly affect the country and aren't being properly planned for in many cases. I spoke to Swiss Re's Peter Hausmann, head of catastrophe perils in Europe, about the report's findings.
Based on our studies, we have seen that losses of extreme events are underestimated. We have a great flood protection here in Switzerland, and over the past decades, really a lot of buildings were built. Plenty of values are behind these excellent flood protection measures. And so it's obvious then that if, in case of a flood, the riverbanks are overtopped, you are confronted with huge losses.
As the world's second largest reinsurer, Swiss Re is also heavily involved in the process of assessing damage from Hurricane Sandy to determine final loss figures, which may not be known for years. What is clear, though, is that a lot of people in the U.S. may be footing the cleanup bill themselves because participation in the federally run National Flood Insurance Program is not required there as it is in Switzerland, and there are limits to how much the national program will cover. Hausmann explains the difference in the two countries' approaches to flood insurance.
The U.S. National Flood Insurance Program is actually a governmental insurance solution. And then beside that, if you would like to have more, if you would like to have additional cover, you can buy this cover in the private market. In Switzerland, then, we find mostly a mandatory cover for all natural perils, but except earthquake. And what's really a major difference here is that the full replacement value is typically covered. We have in Switzerland different solutions. We have for certain cantons a cantonal or a governmental insurance company, and in other areas of Switzerland there is also a private solution.
That was Swiss Re's Peter Hausmann speaking to me earlier. It's often said that there's no such thing as the wrong weather, just the wrong clothing. And Switzerland has a long history of designing and producing textiles, weatherproof and otherwise. It started with linen weaving and embroidery when St. Gallen exported its delicate stitchery all over the world. Today, textiles designed and produced in Switzerland regularly hit the international catwalk as well as the interiors of fine homes, hotels, and other establishments. SwissInfo journalist Susan Fogel-Masika met with some of the nation's young talent to find out what it takes to design the fabric of dreams.
To me, it looks really complicated. How complicated is it for you?
Well, it's my second day, so there's a lot to learn, but it's not impossible.
Marta is a first-year student at Lucerne University, where she's enrolled in the bachelor program for textile design. As part of her training, she has to learn techniques for weaving, embroidery, and printing. When I met her, she was trying to figure out how to work the knitting machine. She and her classmates had to pick two colors to create a jacquard pattern. Carmina had chosen red and green.
They are not my favorite colors together, but at the beginning it doesn't matter. The important thing is that you learn the technique, and then after that, you, if you choose to keep doing this technique, then you can make your project how you want.
In fact, there's a language for every technique. And although the young designers won't actually produce the textiles themselves, it's important that they can talk with the people who do. But the most important aspect of textile design is having ideas. I sat in on a workshop with some third-year students who were brainstorming to create new textile collections. They had spent a couple of weeks coming up with hundreds of sketches, fabric scraps, and other odds and ends. Then they needed to distill these into collections of their own and collections that combine their work with that of their colleagues. Marlies took a moment to explain the creative process to me. What are you doing at the moment here? I see all sorts of materials and samples and drawings.
Yeah, we're trying to create some moods and atmospheres out of the material we have. And I think we can choose different topics and try to make up our own world.
University docent Francisca Bourne was on hand to help guide the students.
The starting point is really themselves. The first part of the project is called Made By. And it's about the author, like me, myself. It's made by me. What is that? The next part is called Made For. So that then is the point, I have a project. What for? I mean, what are the clients or what is the public? Is it going to be on a curtain or on a carpet or on a shirt? And a very important point is to know what you are able to do.
In addition to knowing their own strengths, they need to know who might be interested in their skills. It could be a company like Jakob Schläpfer in St. Gallen, which specializes in luxury textiles for the fashion industry. There I met Samuel, who started in the design department just a few months ago. He gave me a sneak peek at some of the prints being created for next summer's collections.
Firstly, we always print them out on a synthetic fabric because it's a bit cheaper, and we see how the design works on a fabric for having like a first impression. And then we decide what material we're really going to print it on, like this material or linen or silk.
The company produces 250 new fabrics every 3 months. Where they will land exactly is hard to predict, according to creative director Martin Leutold.
It will be interesting to see what piece of clothing will be made from it. Someone will start working with this fabric in Paris. Whether it will turn out to be a dress by Chanel or Dior, it's always a surprise to go to the fashion shows and to see what they've made from our fabrics. Our job is to be enticing. Our materials have to inspire fashion designers to create their own styles and clothes.
Indeed, for a textile designer, the most important thing is creativity. They always have to have their own ideas while sparking the ideas of others.
That was Swiss Info journalist Susan Vogel-Masika in Lucerne and St. Gallen. Read her report on textile design on swissinfo.ch starting November 9th, and watch a video showing where Swiss fabrics end up on the catwalk. The report coincides with Zurich Fashion Days, which will take place November 7th through 10th. That's all for this week. Thanks for listening. I'm Veronica Devorin-Byrne.